Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Captain Hunter's Podcast, the podcast that is dedicated towards bridging the divide between the police and the communities that they serve. Today is part two of our discussion concerning the Native American mascots. Today we are going to focus in on the Super Bowl, the past Super Bowl, the 49ers versus the Kansas City Chiefs. Once again, my guest is Dr. Laurel Davis Delano, professor at Springfield College in Massachusetts. So if you have not listened to part one of this series, then please make sure that you go over and listen to part one. I'm not going to read her bio. Her bio is on part one. We're just going to jump into the conversation. But before we do, remember to rate, subscribe, and share. No matter what platform that you are listening to this on, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, iTunes, Google Play Music, make sure whatever platform it is that you're rating it highly, subscribe and share it. Share it with your friends, neighbors, coworkers, family members, and etc. Also, remember the podcast can be supported through the Patreon page, Captain Hunter's Podcast on Patreon. Also, remember it's Cash App, Venmo, and PayPal. All of those are CPTL Hunter. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is the second half of the interview. So we'll just kind of pick up where we left off at as far as the email. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Super Bowl. I mean, I don't know. Are you into sports? Do you watch football or?
I don't watch any sports, but, you know, maybe a teeny bit.
Okay, no problem. So the Kansas City Chiefs, sports mascot, Native American team. Although what I did notice is that they do not show any actual imagery.
I'm well aware of the Kansas City Chiefs. How they perform their mascot and display it and that kind of thing. They use an arrow head.
Correct, yeah.
And they are named the Chiefs, and they have a tomahawk chop, at which they also chant.
Yeah.
I have a wordless, stereotypical Native war chant, Hollywood version.
Right.
And they also have a huge drum that they bring out sometimes and have various people hit it. and their fans sometimes literally paint their faces red and also put headdresses on.
Correct. Yeah.
So that, you know, that's what I know about them. I also know the reason why they're called the Chiefs. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. They are named after a former Kansas City mayor named Harold Bartle. And he is white. And he was called the Chief as a nickname. And that's related to he helped, or I don't know if he totally founded or helped found, a quote-unquote tribe, like not a real tribe, of the Boy Scouts called the Miccosi.
Okay.
In 1925.
Okay.
And so part of the historical context for this name and for the Boy Scouts is that, Native people, white violence against Native people ended, and Native violence against white people ended in the late 1800s.
Okay.
And right after that, and up and through the early 1900s, there was a lot of cultural appropriation by white organizations, individuals, and so forth during that time period from the late 1800s through the early 1900s. And it's not surprising that that only emerged after the violent conflict was over, because prior to that, white people would not have really wanted, most white people would not have wanted to emulate a stereotype of Native Americans because they hated them, right? But once they were defeated, that's when large amounts of cultural appropriation started to occur. And it was almost like some white people, you know, decided we're not only taking your land and taking control, but we're taking your identities. And simultaneous to this was, industrialization. The boom was from the mid-1800s up until the mid-1900s or a little earlier than that. And so lots of men who used to have physical jobs in the United States, whether it was farming or mining or other things, a lot of that became mechanized and they went to work in factories, but many also became middle-class managers where they weren't even, doing factory labor directly. And so there became this concern among many white men that, white men weren't masculine anymore, or there was a threat to the masculinity of white boys and who are increasingly going to school. And so at that time, a bunch of organizations kind of simultaneously emerged. And that includes, the Boy Scouts, the YMCA, and organized sport. A lot of that happened in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And part of what the founders talk about is making boys more masculine. And they were referring to white boys at the time.
Of course they were.
and so that's one of the reasons for Native appropriation, because it was perceived, the stereotype was that, first of all, Native women were completely ignored. And second of all, Native men were stereotyped as all kind of violent warriors and outdoors people.
Right.
And like in touch with nature and so forth. And so the things like the Boy Scouts had tons, they still have some, cultural appropriation, the YMCA did this too. And of course, sport did it. And, so Native people then were white people took Native symbols of Nativeness and they made it to mean, we're tough, we're warriors, we, are in touch with the outdoors, we're, healthy, vigorous. And so, you see this with the Kansas City Chiefs being named after the white founder of this Native branch of the Boy Scouts that is a pseudo fake tribe with pseudo images, and he's called a chief. But up to the present, you have the symbols that the Kansas City team, like many other teams, use. An arrowhead, what is that a symbol for? That is a symbol for, it's perceived as a weapon.
Right.
It's not perceived, really as a tool for hunting. It's perceived as a weapon, as quote-unquote the Native weapon. And then the tomahawk, which, also was used for various things like cutting plants down, and white people had axes and, was used for various things, is also perceived as a weapon. And so when the fans do the chop, they're, it's symbolizing chopping with a weapon or, and so both of those symbols are associated with warriors, with fighting, with Native warriors. And then the chant is, it's like, stereotypical.
Right.
And everything's coming from Hollywood movies. And so the majority of non-Native people, think this is honoring, even though, the majority of Native people don't think so. There's just a brand new study out that clearly demonstrates this. And it was interesting to me that finally, in the coverage leading up to the Super Bowl, which also, if you read some of the Native coverage, also included a critique of the 49ers, because the 49ers were colonists.
Right.
And the Native population in California was pretty much decimated through violence, poverty, and other things, when the 49ers and others moved in, right? After gold, okay? and other things. And so, so it was like, it just, you know, really kind of an affirmation of colonialism and stereotyping, even though the majority of non-native people do not at all perceive it that way, right? They think, you know, that this is some semi-accurate thing and it's honoring and they will not listen to other voices. And the Kansas City Club tried to control some of this, as did the media. So if you know what you were looking for, you could find tons of stereotyping, but during the filming of the show, the people filming it generally avoided showing the audience.
Yes,
you could hear the chant in the background.
Yeah. Yes.
But they really, more than usual, I think, you know, like, didn't pan the audience or close up the audience. And so, you know, people didn't see it as much as they normally would. It's, to me, it is incredibly stereotypical, incredibly offensive, and really teaching people stereotypes.
Right, right.
As we talked about prior.
Now, you talked about the law of cultural appropriation that they had back in the 1800s. Could you explain that a little bit more?
There's not a law. There's no law.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you said. I thought you said there was...
No. It's like a practice. So cultural appropriation is when you take other people's identities.
Right.
And you, you know, put yourself in the position of that identity.
Okay.
So if I'm a white person, so if I were to, you know, put on blackface, right, and dress in a manner that I think my stereotype of African Americans is, and then talk in a way that I think that African Americans talk, you know, stereotypically, you know, that'd be cultural appropriation.
Right. No, I definitely understand it, but maybe I just misunderstood what you said. I thought you said back in 1800s there was some type of law or rule against cultural appropriation, and then once the hostilities ended, then more white people started to.
Oh, okay. Okay. No, there's absolutely no law involved.
Okay.
My point was, is that white people prior to the hostilities, the violent hostilities, there was still hostilities, ending, most white people, there was cultural appropriation before the hostilities ended, certainly. But what it blossomed after that, because before that, white people wouldn't have been interested, most white people, in cultural appropriation. Because they viewed Native people prior to that time as literally bloodthirsty savage warriors who were in the way and needed to be defeated, right? And so they wouldn't like, it would be like portraying yourself, like wanting to portray yourself as, you know, some enemy, right?
Right, right, right.
And so they didn't like think that was attractive, you know, at that time.
Right. No, I definitely see that, and I definitely understand that. And I did not read that article. I don't know if you have it concerning the 49ers. I would like to read it. But I was thinking that while I was watching the game, even up leading to the game, I did not watch much of the news conferences and press conferences. I think as I get a little bit older, I'm in my 40s now, as I get a little bit older, my enthusiasm about sports has definitely waned. So I didn't watch all the press conferences, but I was thinking about the 49ers and the irony about the 49ers versus the, you know, a Native American team. I didn't voice it to anyone, but obviously because of our conversation that we had before, and because I'm, you know, in the modern day terms, I'm a little more woke as to what's going on. I did think about the irony concerning that. You know, these settlers who've come in to the California region and then kind of wipe everyone out, and then they glorify that particular team.
Yeah. It was more than one piece published on this, but I can send you one of them.
Yeah, that'd be great. I also, concerning what you talked about, the masculinity. Now, I watched a documentary about the Dallas Cowboys. This is maybe a year or two ago when I saw that documentary. I am not a Dallas Cowboys fan, but I thought it was interesting in why they were called America's Team and tried to lay out the history of the Dallas Cowboys, particularly in the 1970s. And this will go back to what you were talking about, the type of resurgence of masculinity. And this documentary was talking about how, now the previous, obviously they're talking about the time period that the documentary focused on was the 1970s. And obviously previous to that, a decade wide was the 1960s, when more black people in the civil rights movement began to get more rights. And they thought it was, they being, wanted to reassert the dominance of white males again, essentially. This is what it was saying. And it reassert their masculinity because they thought that they had lost something when they gave up all these civil rights. And so now that we have these cowboys, right? These masculine, frontiersmen type of, and all that kind of stuff. And that's why they, how they became America's Team, because it was reasserting of this cowboy swankering masculine imagery. And I think that that's so ironic that this is the way that they wanted to, as you mentioned with this, with the, creation of sports teams, right? And going into factory jobs and all that kind of stuff. And I thought it was, and so I'm definitely agreeing with you that this is a problem where we challenged the masculinity of one, by asserting a sports team or accepting or adopting some image, whether it's the Cowboys, whether it's the 49ers, or even when people think that they're paying homage to the Native American team. So it's
yeah, and the Cowboy, of course, a cowboy, like literally, is somebody who, you know, rounds up cows, right?
Right.
You know, and herds cows. And so there are, of course, Native American cowboys, African American cowboys, and, you know, Latinx cowboys. I don't know if there historically have been Asian cowboys in the United States, Asian American cowboys, but, you know, that this has been a multi-ethnic, multi-racial position, but it's perceived as white, right, through kind of this historical lens.
Right.
And it's also not perceived mainly as somebody who rounds up cattle. It's perceived, you know, there's a long running folk game in United States society called Cowboys and Indians, right?
Right.
And
right.
It doesn't have the cowboys rounding up cattle. It has a fight. They fight, right? And so the cowboys are, you know, the way that people are perceiving cowboys isn't really like cattle ranchers. You know, it's more fighters.
Right.
And then once it becomes like kind of white colonial fighters who are perceived to be fighting Native Americans, then that erases other types of literal cowboys, right?
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know.
And then there's the erasure of it. I mean, I've read some studies that said between one quarter and one third of these cowboys were African American. So, but if they want to take away the toughness, or assert that there's a certain toughness, then obviously you don't want to include African Americans in this masculine toughness of being out on the frontier and all that kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So it's all very, very, very interesting. Mm-hmm. I also thought what you talked about, that they won't listen. They being the whether it's the head of the organization or any other organization. I know that I know this is probably a slur. Well, the Washington Redskins, their owner said he don't care what the native groups are saying. He's not changing the name of his team.
Yeah. We can use the term, other terms like our skins or
yes.
Slur skins.
Yes, yes. Slur
when
skins.
We're
I'll call
it.
Them that. Slur skins.
It's, you know, it's privilege, right? It's class privilege that people own these companies. It's race privilege in places like Killington. You know, I mean, literally, you have the namesake Nipmuc tribal nation saying to Killington people, you know, we don't want this.
Right.
And meanwhile, Killington's like, we're honoring you. And it's like, really? What's the disconnect here? And so and people can still say, even though they say, the Nipmuc, you know, you're not honoring us, that people can still say, yes, we are. Like, how is that even possible that you are so privileged and so have so much hubris or overconfidence that you can say what other people think, you know, when other people are saying, no, that's not what we think. Just the amount of kind of arrogance, right?
Right.
And ignoring and making one's own arguments. And then that not only fly in the face of Native voices, but fly in the face of research findings. I'll send you something else that was really interesting. There was a piece done by a group called something like, I could be getting this wrong, Indigenous Engineers. And they took like tweets and I think it was other types of social media, and they used computerization to analyze negativity in fans' language that is stereotypical and generally negative. And, you know, they compared fans talking about the 49ers to fans talking about the Kansas City team. And, you know, there was much more stereotyping and negativity in the Kansas City language.
Okay.
Like violent language and that kind of thing. So people don't care, and they don't care enough to learn.
Right.
And so, like, for example, at the local level, in one case I was involved in, they brought in four educators, and not me, other educators, to talk about, you know, one person was talking about history of Native people in the area, one person was talking about, I don't know what else. And, you know, most of the diehard Native mascot supporters never came, you know? And so it was like, you know, a few of them, a few neutral people, and then people that understand Native issues that were in the audience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the town and the school board had made this big effort to bring in a series of educators. And so it's just raw power and raw arrogance.
Now which group didn't show up for that?
So the people that supported the local Native mascot.
Okay, and they did not show up when they had
they
a panel.
They did not. Well, a few, but okay. Hardly any.
Because they don't care.
Because they don't care, and they think that they know better,
right?
Than Native people. I mean, there was a panel of local Native people. That was one of the programs. Mm. And they're just super confident. It's a combination of, like, arrogance, we know better, okay? And we don't care what Native people think. There was a, oh my gosh, I printed it and put it on my office door. There's a Native rapper. What's his name? His name is Frank Walm. He does a lot of really great Native rap and or hip hop. And he had a I wish I could find it quickly, but I can't. But I can send it to you. He had a post where he basically said, in better words than this, you know, white people will defend Native mascots, you know, but they won't defend Native people.
Mm, wow. Okay. That's
powerful. You know, like powerful. They care more about Native mascots than they care about Native people.
Right.
There's a disconnect there, right? For most, not everyone.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I definitely see there is a disconnect.
He's got a wonderful, you know, the Peter Pan movie, the original Peter Pan movie is very racist against Native people. And he's got a great rap on that. I'll send you the rap.
I did not take the type of person who listened to rap music. I got to be honest.
Okay. No, it's just a clip. It's just words that are.
No. Really I was saying I didn't think that you listened to rap music. I didn't take you for the
time.
Well,
I don't.
Oh, okay.
I don't know whether you listen to rap music. But I don't have time to listen to most music. But I like all kinds of music, okay. Except hard rock. Okay. And so I listen to it because he's so insightful, you know?
Yeah, I definitely like to check that out. This psychology, and I know that you probably can't explain it, but I mean, we talked about they don't care. They think they know better. Is that the prevailing dominant ideologies, thought process amongst the academic community as to why this is going on? Is there a sense of, you know, we talked about entitlement. I mean, these are all really strong words. These are all the dominant theories that why these people just don't care.
Well, I'm not a psychologist. I'm a sociologist.
I got you.
But some of these mechanisms are extremely hard to study. And it takes a big effort so I think we might have talked about this before, where, you know, there's very few scholars studying Native issues. Native people are greatly underrepresented with college degrees, greatly underrepresented as faculty, right?
Right.
And non-Native people, I mean, there's some historians that are not Native that study Native topics, but, you know, people studying the contemporary world, there's a very small number, and a Native or non-Native. And so people are just trying to do these types of studies, and they're also extremely difficult studies to do. You know, we know, for example, that exposing white people from one study by Stephanie Freiberg, that exposing white people to Native mascot imagery increases their self-esteem.
Right, right.
But, you know, that's the extent of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, concerning the community that we do know of, the academic community, maybe even other Native leaders, has there been, because of the Super Bowl, has there been a lot of chatter? I know there's chat rooms, if there's been conferences, is there, or, you know, people putting on YouTube videos or whatever. Has there been a lot of stirring concerning this? And where could people go to look at this and maybe educate themselves more? You know, I know that we're talking about.
Are you referring specifically to the recent game with Kansas City?
Correct. Yes, yes. And leading up to that, I know we talked, you said there were a number of articles.
Yeah, there was tons. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, whenever there's an event going on, like before every Halloween, people are worried about Native costumes. And so there's all this chatter and posting, you know, showing what they're selling in the stores, and so forth, and people dressed up going to Halloween parties before Thanksgiving. There's this release of stuff about all the myths versus the truths about Thanksgiving. You know, so there's continual chatter and discussion on Facebook, Twitter, you know, all the main things, including from organizations. There's a new organization called Illuminative, like Illum I and then capital N Native. Mm-hmm. You know, they are focused very much on Native representations. So they have a little campaign. They had a little campaign, you know, related to the Super Bowl. You know, so there's lots of stuff going on. But it's very difficult. Oh, there was a great piece in another news piece that somebody wrote about how when these events come up, like there's a focus on Native people in the mainstream, or at least not Native people, representations of Native people, and a few Native voices make it out into the mainstream media. But as soon as that's done, the mainstream media stop paying attention to, generally speaking, Native issues, which are like ongoing. And so to really see what's going on with Native issues, which are way beyond the representational issues that we've been talking about, you know, you would have to turn to Native media.
Right.
Or a few mainstream sources that have like a Native beat, you know, that they cover Native issues on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So there's an organization called the Native American Journalists Association. And they make efforts to get, to not only cover things through Native media, but to try to get things into the mainstream media.
Yeah, I can definitely see that being an issue. Concerning what people talked about, you know, during Halloween and Thanksgiving, do you think, and I did mention this a little bit before, but do you think that people think that Native people are being overly sensitive, that they're being too liberal, to being snowflakes and all this kind of stuff, and they just get over it. Is there any of that thought process?
Yeah. And white people also, yes, absolutely. That pretty much comes up not just with Native issues, right?
Well, definitely.
But with
right.
kind of any time persons of color are saying, you know, like, this is a problematic representation or this is problematic language, you know, they get shot down by, not literally, obviously, you know, by people that are the, you know, anti-PC people. That think that language and representations have no effect, essentially, which there's enormous amounts of literature that counter that premise. But, and they also, do this, especially with Native issues, but also with other, you know, representational issues that people of color identify. You know, they say, you know, well, my black friend or, the, you know, not all black people are, or there are Native people, or there are Asian people, you know, that, you know, don't have a problem with this.
Right, right, right.
And so there's, you know, these are typical tactics that occur every time, you know, people from groups that have less power, like, identify representational issues.
Very interesting. You gave us a history of the Kansas City Chiefs and how they were named after, you know, after their mayor or whatever. Do you know the history of the slur word or the slur words, right? The Washington slur words, slur skins. Can you give us, I know the history of the team, but tell us why the R word is a slur. If you know that, can you tell us why that is?
Why it's a slur?
Yes.
okay. I thought you were asking me about the history of the team. There's
I am. So, okay. but I want to know about the.
So this is not my area of expertise. I'm not a historian.
Okay.
And there are people that have written about this. Most notably, there's a book about it by C. Richard King. That's a, you know, relatively new book. And it's about the history and the current marketing, and the truths and the myths related to that particular team. And so I can, there's no way I can summarize any of that. But I can say, focusing on the contemporary, and this is a question that's often asked to slurskin fans.
Slurskin.
Would you walk up to a Native person and say, are you a arskin? Or call that, or I'm got a Native friend or a Native person, this is, you know, Tom Jones. He's an arskin.
I think these people would do it. I mean, I think there's people, I don't think that they understand that it's a slur. I really don't believe that they do. I really, you talked about the media before, and what I was thinking about when we talked about the media, people are living in such big echo chambers, right? I try to read the news because I try to stay on top of police stuff and all that kind of stuff, but I hardly ever come across this type of stuff. So people, if it's not in people's faces consistently, as you mentioned, then they are not going to know. And I do think that there are many arskin fans, slurskin fans, who don't know that this is a problem. I really believe that.
No, I think it's true, but I think there are people that are aware that other people perceive it as a problem.
Okay.
I don't think that there are many slurskin fans who are unaware that some Native people and some non-Native people think this is a slur. They would have to be in the dark to not know that other people think that. And so given that they know that other people think that, I don't think they'd use it in a neutral way in a context, right?
Okay.
And regardless of the origin of that word, and regardless of the origin of the N-word,
right.
Today a very high percentage of Native people and African-American people perceive these words to be slurs, right? Not everybody,
right?
But, you know, any group of people do not have consensus. There's like no such thing. The Republicans don't have consensus, right? Women don't have consensus. But, you know, certainly, you know, if you've got large segments of a population that says, you know, this is a slur, right? then other people need to respect that.
Right. Why is it a slur? I mean, is it because, if you know the history of where this term, and I don't know, I did read it maybe 15 years ago, but could you explain to the audience why it's a slur?
Because of the historical context in which it was used, okay? Mm-hmm. So skin is skin, right? So many, many scholars and Native people know that they used to take the scalps of Native people. And in the Boston area, they literally had one of the Native chief's scalp on a stick in the town for something like 15 to 20 years.
Oh, my God.
And so so red refers to blood and red refers to Native people. The word like red isn't the issue, right? So it is perceived to, and there's evidence, like, you know, like there's sometimes people post whenever this comes up an ad. I don't know. I can't remember where it's from, but it was in some newspaper or some early publication. And it might have been from Minnesota. And it said, this is how much you can get for a Native man's scalp. This is how much you can get for a Native woman's scalp. This is how much you can get for a Native child's scalp. Like, you know, basically evidence that you kill them and then we'll pay you. And the R skin word is in that ad.
Wow.
And so people know this, right? They like, you know, they might not know this particular example, but they know kind of this history, and they're saying this word is attached to this atrocious history.
Yeah, that's really, really unfortunate. And I think about what we talked about before as far as the Native people being portrayed as bloodthirsty savages, yet it was these people who were paying to have them scalped, them, you know, Native American people have them scalped and, as you mentioned, put their scalps in the middle of a town, and at the same time, lynching my ancestors. So this is just...
Yeah.
The irony and hypocrisy is just...
You know, here's another hypocrisy. Abraham Lincoln, which was recently celebrated by a movie, he ordered the hanging of more than 20, I don't know if it was around 30 Native people in Minnesota who were rebelling because they were like, I don't know if it was called a reservation, but they were on this, like kept on this one territory, and they had no food. And so they were starving. And so they rebelled, and he ordered them hung. Oh. And they were hung.
Wow. Wow.
And so, you know, this is the kind of thing that the general public, you know, they might have a sense, oh, there were brutalities back then, you know. But again, one thing that we talked about earlier was, you know, Native people, when non-Native, most actually, I have a study related to this, you know, are thinking about... Native people and coming into contact with representations of Native people, they're thinking about Native people from the past. They're not thinking about, like, you know, my neighbor down the street who is a police officer or a school teacher or a mail carrier.
Yeah, I think that that's very eye-opening. And I know that I thought about the conversation we had before, and it was, you know, when I think about if someone were to ask me to picture a Native, close my eyes and picture a Native person, that's what I would picture. And, you know, I think that as we talked about representation before, I think that I ought to be able to close my eyes and look at and think of, okay, a Native American person can be an astronaut, can be an architect, can be a doctor, can be, you know, whatever they want. I mean, I know that's what I want to be, to close my eyes and picture when I see an African American, and not that stereotypical, you know, whatever in their dialect and the way that they speak and everything like that. I want to be able to close my eyes and picture, you know, a President Obama, or, and that's why it's very important that we see images of people in Congress and, you know, lawyers and doctors and all that kind of stuff.
You and I live in an area with a very low percentage of Native residents.
Right.
I know that you're usually focused on or often, I should say, focused on criminal justice issues, a lot of people don't know that the incarceration rate for Native Americans is the highest for any group.
Yeah, I did actually, well, I did not know that particular fact, but I did know that that they are very much over-policed and brutalized as much as African Americans, if not as much, if not more.
And they have a harder time being successful when they, you know, after their first contact with the criminal justice system,
now,
just like African Americans do. You know, making it through the system with either no punishment or less punishment.
There's been numerous movies about African Americans. There's one that was out fairly recently. I think it's called Just Mercy. Mm-hmm. Are there works about Native American people? Would people watch it? Talking about the criminal justice system, whether it's a movie or a documentary. I mean, can we get this information out there so people can understand not only what we're talking about, the mascot issue, but criminal justice issues and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I don't know of that, and it's not a topic that I study, but I do know that there are increasingly many pieces out there about missing and murdered Indigenous women, because they have the highest rate of being of any racial group being murdered or missing or raped. And you know, there's a long history, and most of the perpetrators are not Native.
I think I read that before,
so,
too, yeah.
What?
I think I read that before as well. Yes, please go
yeah,
on.
Yeah, so there are some films, new, old, professionally made, not professionally made. there's a movie, you know, related to that topic, but I don't know about the criminal justice in general. But yeah. There might be.
Right.
But it's very hard for Native media producers to get their material into the mainstream.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Well, I thank you for your time. So just one more time, can you tell us, I know you're going to send me some articles and I'll try to put them up on my websites and things. Can you just tell us what's the latest that's going on in your realm of expertise? Are there papers, conferences coming up, or it's something that that the average person can access, read about, documentaries we can watch?
Well, the thing that I would most recommend that people read is the Reclaiming Native Truth report. They have a general one on research findings, and then they have one for allies and one for Native people. And that the reason why I would recommend that is because it's not in academic language, and it's comprehensive. You know, it covers kind of a lot of attitudinal and representational issues that we haven't even touched on at all in our conversations because we've been focused on mascots. So I would recommend that. I'd recommend, you know, reading on a regular basis, Native news, such as, but not only, Indian Country Today, which is available online. You know, so like that might be a good start. There's many, many resources out there. In terms of things that are coming out soon, you know, you can look at, I don't know, like it's hard to identify one particular thing that's coming out soon, you know, I don't like to focus much on myself, but I have, I'm working on going to present in a month half of a paper that's on what non-Native people are exposed to in terms of the quantity to which they are exposed to and know of famous Native deceased, alive Native people. Television shows with reoccurring Native characters and movies. And in the other half of the paper, we're looking at the most commonly exposed people and shows or films, what's the content of that? Because we did then a content analysis. So that's what I'm working on. And, you know, beyond representations, the most, my personal opinion, the most important thing for non-Native people to understand about Native people is to come to learn about the nature of Native nation sovereignty, because most people don't understand what that means, that there are, you know, over 470 federally recognized Native tribal nations. What does it mean that they have sovereignty? Why do they have sovereignty? How is sovereignty, how do they enact sovereignty? And how is that sovereignty beneficial to them? So there's some scholarship around that. But because Native people are so missing from representations, and we've been talking a lot about the media, but schools, okay? It, you know, there's some research that shows that, you know, 87% or something of the state education curriculums, you know, stop covering Native people at around 1900, you know?
Wow.
They disappear from the social studies curriculum. And so, you know, we need to like work on, we need to support in Massachusetts, there's 5 indigenous peoples bills. We need to support them. And that includes things like changing the school curriculums. And so, you know, there's lots of ways to get involved. There's lots of things to find. Again, I would probably recommend reclaiming Native truth and following Native news. And at first, people might not understand what is being discussed, but if you keep following it, you'll learn what the issues are, and you'll learn positive things and neutral things, as well as struggles.
Yes, yes. Just one last question here. Do these particular bills, you talk about school teachings, the social studies and things, when they talk about that, and I know, and I'm asking this on behalf of Native American people as well as African American people and any other marginalized people, really, mm-hmm. is it that white people take that as a threat when we want to start introducing African American studies? I know that there was a bill that was shot down, I believe in North mm-hmm. Carolina, to teach African American studies. Would they take it as a threat that now we want to introduce teaching the history and contemporary issues with Native American people? It stops in 1900. Obviously, they're still going on. Would white people take that as a threat to them?
I think it depends. I think on this issue, I think it's a little different than the mascot issue. I think a lot of people want to learn, and they want to be inclusive. I think there are a segment of the population that we were referring to before that are kind of, we might refer to them as the anti-PC people. They think anything's like, if they think that it's got any tinge of, you know, something that is identifying a different group, they're like, oh no, that's just, you know, why bother?
Right.
And so, but I think a lot of people, the research shows, including the Reclaiming Native Truth Project, that, you know, most non-Native people want to learn about this stuff. And my experience is a lot of non-African American people want to learn about, you know, the material. So I think that's kind of a little different. Like when I was looking recently, they made some changes in the Massachusetts state curriculum and they were all good, you know, increasing coverage of, except for, like, I saw nothing about Puerto Rico and Puerto Ricans. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a really high percentage of Puerto Ricans who live in your state of Connecticut and my state of Massachusetts and in my particular area of Massachusetts. And we're missing. People don't know the history of Puerto Rico. They don't know why Puerto Rico is beyond the, you know, weather catastrophes, why Puerto Rico has struggled so much. They don't know why many Puerto Ricans have migrated to the mainland. They don't understand. And so they don't even know that, you know, the political status of Puerto Rico. And so, you know, this is helpful, right? If we can get this, and I don't think there would be a large number of people objecting to the infusion of information about Puerto Rico into the curriculum.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. And I think it should be. I think it should be, I think all those issues, the Hawaiian people, the Puerto Rican
yeah.
people, yeah, I think it all should be incorporated into, so we can understand. There was a viral video a couple years ago about this guy attacking, verbally attacking a Puerto Rican lady because she had a Puerto Rican flag on her shirt and telling her that, you know, this is America. So obviously he didn't understand that he was, that she was an American citizen as he was.
And, you know, a lot of people, like I said, they're supportive of learning more about this stuff. You know, the, you know, people and teachers, there's all, I read a really, most, I'm critical of a lot of journalism, but there was this, what I thought was this really great journalism piece, about lack of, the teachers in a state, and I can't remember the state, name at the moment, you know, really wanting to meet the, state curriculum standards regarding teaching native material, but they weren't prepared. And so they would have to just like get something else somebody else had made and like stick it in there, like, you know, stating kind of memorized things without having like enough background to do a really good job teaching it. And so, you know, we need this, and we need to tap the resources that are out there to, you know, transform the content of the media, transform the content of the education curriculum, and this will be helpful to people. And, you know, I think then we will have less problems. You know, sometimes people think about issues of language and issues of representation as detached from things like poverty or criminal justice issues, or health issues, but everything's intertwined, right? So our ideas shape behaviors, they shape systems, they shape practices, and those, and then what's out there in the world of practices, you know, then affect our ideas. And so being dismissive of, you know, representations, and whether it's the quantity of them or the content of them, is not helpful, you know, because these the quantity and content affects real lives on the ground.
Right. Absolutely. Well, thank you again. I really, really appreciate you coming back on. We talked back in December 2019, and I just wanted to reach out to you and get your thoughts and opinions about the Super Bowl. And I really appreciate you coming back on, and you gave us another wealth of information. It's supposed to be only a 5 or 10 minute conversation. It's been 50 minutes. Yeah. And I appreciate it. I appreciate it. It's very, very, very enlightening. And I really appreciated the, everything you said. And it really made me think, you know, about the 49ers and Cowboys and this reclaiming of masculinity and all this kind of threats to their own people's own psyche and all that kind of stuff. So I really appreciate it. So,
well, I appreciate yourself and other people who would like to learn about, you know, racial and ethnic groups that they, you know, that they know less about than they might be able to, you know, learning. I appreciate people who want to learn.
Well, thank you so much. I'm anxious.
You're welcome.
I'm very anxious to hear this rap song. So if you could send it to
me. Yes, I'm going
to
send it. It's great. Okay. He's great. Lots of his songs are great.
Okay. I'm going to have to check this guy out. Maybe download some of his work and give him some support. So.
Okay. All right.
Thanks again. Okay. Bye. Thank you once again to my special guest, Dr. Laurel Davis Delano. I really appreciate her taking the time out to come back on to Captain Hunter's podcast. She demonstrated a wealth of knowledge concerning this. So I hope that next time that you watch any type of sports teams, that you give this a little bit of thought as to, you know, the history of the team, how the owners feel, if the television media is actually showing the fans in the stands, and just give some thoughts to the history of the Cowboys, the 49ers, any other slur skins or whoever. So just give a little bit of thought to that. So that's it. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure that you like, subscribe, and share. Remember, I can be supported through PayPal, Cash App, Venmo. All of those are CPTL Hunter. Reach out to me, CPTLHunter@gmail.com. Let me know what you think. Let me know what you like and what you don't like. I'm always looking for guests and show ideas. Until next time, much love and peace.